Let's talk first of all about Carbonomics, climate change, and ESG. How many more products, as a percentage of overall products, are your existing clients asking for? How much more can this space actually grow?
I think we're just at the beginning in terms of the development here. And as you said, this is our first conference dedicated, you know, solely to this topic. But if I look at the support and the participation, we've got, you know, something like 30 different, you know, really big company CEOs participating today. Some of them are from the energy space, you know, upstream oil and gas, but also renewables, mobility companies, consumer products companies. So really, right across the economy. And we've got something, you know, in the order of 5,000 participants broadly from the investor universe. So huge focus and huge interest in the topic. And, you know, Biden's election obviously gives it further impetus.
Welcome back to Dialed Up. It's time to talk about the new frontier of agriculture, carbon markets.
Greenhouse gas emissions like carbon dioxide is a crucial component in the fight against climate change. One way governments are trying to reduce their emissions is through carbon trading, a market-based system that aims to provide economic incentives for countries and businesses to reduce their environmental footprint.
Globally, about 25% of our climate change pollution is caused by food and agriculture. Most of that's because we're deforesting places like the Amazon to create more farmland. But also the methane that comes out of our cattle and rice fields is also contributing to climate change, as is the overuse of fertilizers and other things. But regenerative agriculture seeks to reverse that and not only kind of cut down the pollution, but maybe in some cases even soak up some of the pollution we put in the atmosphere, particularly carbon dioxide.
Driven by climate-conscious consumers, a number of massive corporations, including General Mills and PepsiCo, are vowing to scale regenerative practices across millions of acres of farmland. But can it help tackle climate change?
Carbon markets are a new frontier in sustainable agriculture. Both voluntary and involuntary markets, driven by private buyers and by government regulation, respectively, allow growers to explore the potential of new products, practices, and technologies while maintaining financial stability and mitigating risk. Carbon markets incentivize farmers by adding a key new product to the ag market, carbon credits. Put simply, farmers can produce carbon credits and sell them to other organizations, companies, or entities. Now, most of us have seen or heard of private companies declaring a sustainability goal. Say they want to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2030. And many of us think, how can they do that? How can General Mills or Apple or other companies that fly their products across the globe claim to emit zero carbon in an entire year? Well, the answer lies in economics and a little algebra. These companies can technically buy carbon credits from farmers to offset their own carbon emissions. One carbon credit is equal to 1 metric ton of carbon sequestered in a farmer's soil. It sounds like mad science, but I mean it. When farmers employ sustainable farming practices, their soil becomes stronger. That soil holds more carbon, which means less of it is released into the air. That creates a negative balance of carbon, which private companies can fill with their own carbon emissions. Now, let's back up just a second. When farmers sequester carbon, they don't actually create a negative balance. It's not like the air is lacking carbon, and it's not like big companies are more justified in their actions when they emit carbon through product development or transportation. When I say negative balance, it's just to help us understand that there's less carbon in the air than what would have been if no farmers were acting sustainably. This negative balance is what allows companies to claim that net zero emissions goal, or emissions reductions, without changing their practices. They're paying for the carbon they're emitting and letting farmers do the work to help the earth cool down. Of course, there are some food companies who truly do reduce their carbon by paying for and working with sustainable farmers. That's because the carbon emitted is within their own system, so it's counted as their emissions. For example, General Mills would be counting a farmer's carbon emissions in their own company emissions rate. So if they pay a farmer for carbon credits, they actually are sequestering their own carbon and reducing their emissions. But that's a long story. For now, what you need to know is that farmers can pull carbon out of the atmosphere and help fight climate change, and private companies can pay them for it. Carbon markets are a great way for private companies to incentivize sustainable farming practices. As Dr. Boland said in an earlier episode, it helps private companies quantify their efforts towards a more sustainable future, and that helps their stakeholders feel more justified in paying for them. Now, while it's a new market, it's a market that's gaining ground with several large companies. In fact, in June of this year, S&P Global said 2021 will probably be remembered as the year when carbon finance emerged as a talking point among a wide range of industries. So, carbon markets, if they continue to be successful, are going nowhere fast.
So, Zach, I don't know how we're supposed to start this panel, but I suppose we just start like we always start on our podcast and just wing it.
I'm going to let you do that because it's your field day.
I attended a carbon panel discussion earlier this year at a field day hosted by Continuum Ag, a soil health software company, to hear different perspectives on the topic. For those who were paying attention earlier this season, that's Mitchell Hora's company. The panel featured growers Mitchell Hora and Zach Johnson. Mitchell Hora is the person you heard at the top of the episode. The panel also featured Iowa Secretary of Ag Mike Nag and Rabobank's Christiane Barkhan, an ag finance specialist. Together, they discuss the ups and downs of carbon markets, how the markets can expand, and the potential they bring for sustainable and regenerative agriculture.
We got a lot to unpack there, Zach.
Yep. There's a lot to unpack with carbon markets in general.
What I think is overall with sustainability, I'm like, yeah, feeding the growing population, but doing it with less erosion, doing it with less inputs, but be able to create a better, nutritious product too. And sequester carbon, and improve water, and do all these things. So, you know, and Zach, we can lead wherever we want to go, but maybe let's dig a little bit deeper and Christian on, okay, so like, or Mike, I mean, we've looked at this through Iowa for the nutrient reduction strategy.
Right.
So how do we continue to drive and get all of these different things solved, all these problems?
I'll show you my notes. So I have to draw myself a picture sometimes. So at the bottom of this, I've got a little progression that I made here as I was, again, trying to put some thought around this. You know, I like the way you kind of framed that up. So what I wrote down was we've got an opportunity to generate environmental credits or carbon credits. We're focused on needing to improve soil health. We are working on improving water quality. We need to continue to prevent soil erosion. We have to have a market to or access to the marketplace and a license to operate. And we need to be working on improving habitat. And, okay, I was doing the same thing. Then I said, well, that all leads to sustainability and resiliency, right? And however you define that, there's lots of ways to define them, but sustainability and resiliency equals productivity and profitability. And those things equal quality of life for all of us who are in agriculture, but also for those we serve. That was my progression as I went through it. But I definitely think that, you know, again, as we let's dig in a little bit on this carbon space and just environmental credits generally around sustainability. Again, as we view it here in the state of Iowa, we are well positioned, I believe. Iowa farmers are well positioned. Our agribusinesses are well positioned because of that long history that we have in this state. And it's a history of public-private partnerships working to get things done. So, you know, you go back, it goes all the way back to the Dust Bowl era coming out of that. Iowans, you know, USDA gets into the soil conservation business. Iowans adopt them with soil and water conservation districts across the state. In the 70s, the state of Iowa becomes the first state in the nation to use state appropriation dollars for cost share for soil conservation, soil erosion prevention. And then we become the first state to implement our nutrient reduction strategy, looking at phosphorus and nitrogen reductions coming off of farms. So we've got a long history of being leaders, and that's not because of government, by the way. That's because of Iowa farmers and Iowans being who they are. And so how can we then build on that great foundation to carry us forward? And again, it's through many of the same things that that have got us to where we are today on these nutrient reduction strategy and soil conservation is working in partnership. You know, working to de-risk the adoption of new practices, whatever they may be. You know, we may be talking cover crops, no-till, nitrate-reducing wetlands, nutrient management, you name it. It could be many more. There will certainly be innovation in this space. But it's when you de-risk those things, you provide technical assistance, we can provide some financial assistance, a marketplace develops to sell off credits, This all results in more interest, awareness, and more adoption of practices across the state. So again, it's trying to address this from, not that we're gonna, hey, let's sweep away everything that we've done for all the reasons that we've done them today, because we're gonna start focusing only on carbon from here forward. No, that's not what we're talking about. We need to build on top of that, and these layers of benefit will come to us. But that's the approach. You know, we need to, I'll say this too, that, you know, government doesn't have all the answers, right? Government doesn't have all the answers. So it is only through private-public partnerships that we're gonna be able to advance. I like to say government can do a few things. One, we can get the heck out of the way. We can help convene people and bring partners together. And then we can act. But let's start with that first one. Sometimes we need to get out of the way and let the marketplace develop a little bit and be a player in that, or ensure that there's fairness in that marketplace. But government doesn't have all the answers. Don't be surprised when we aren't the most innovative player at the table, okay? But how can we be enable progress in this space?
I'm surprised to hear that government doesn't have all the answers.
Was that a surprise to you?
Yeah, that was shocking.
In Minnesota, the government has all the answers. So that's
I'd say we should.
We don't need to get into that.
We should ask for a poll here, but I never ask a question you don't know the answer to already. But I think there are a few nodding heads out here.
Christian, I want to ask you a question. You had mentioned before about how, you know, Rabobank does tons of financing, and the mission is to grow along with farmers. And the financing that you do, there's always kind of an undertone of sustainability, right? Can you give me an example of that? What do you mean if I come to you as a farmer and I want to work with you as a lender? I mean, what does that look like when you talk about having that undertone of sustainability?
Well, I mean, it starts with recognizing that first there is an opportunity to do things different, right? So we're looking at partnering with clients that have that opportunity recognized. The other thing is you have to understand sustainability, like the secretary said really well. It's not just carbon. There's about 40, 50 indicators in environmental, social, and economic that you can act on, right? Carbon is just one of them, okay? So you can create a carbon, absolutely fantastic product that's actually not the most sustainable product because it's screwed up everywhere else. So you gotta keep that balance, you know, in check. So if you look at, so we gotta have that mindset of sustainability, and working with clients on sustainability takes multiple actions, right? Now, if you think of sustainability as a continuous improvement journey, which is what we've been on for the past 150 years, you gotta start like every journey. If I wanna go back home to Colorado, I have to know where I'm at right now. I gotta take a car and I have to go to the airport and all that stuff. So same thing with sustainability, you gotta take a baseline. You gotta know where you are. So that's what we're working with our clients on, in terms of trying to figure out where are we, where are they in sustainability on that journey today? Where are they in terms of impact categories of sustainability, 40 to 50 ones that impact their business and the market segments the most? Try to identify the opportunities where we can actually change things and help them through financing change those things, right? So we do have targeted financing for like solar and we do dairy digesters and so on, where we have targeted financing, but we hope to develop a lot more than that in the future that's focused specifically on certain technologies. There are a few amazing projects that we're working on that where I hope we can unveil some of this at a later stage this year.
So Christian, we're seeing a lot of these different market, we're seeing a lot of these things develop and stuff, but how do we ensure, though, that as these markets are developed, that the number one person to benefit is the farmer? Because I feel like that's some of the issue that we're seeing right now in other sustainability initiatives or carbon markets and stuff, is that how do we ensure that the farmer, the family farm, and rural communities are the number one to really be able to benefit?
I take it to the next level, and I'd say it's not just our farmers. It's their families and their kids and the future generations as well. So it's an extrapolation of us together with them. It's about people and people benefit. And like I said, feeding that world going further. So there is definitely an opportunity for continuous improvement, but like every change out there, it's not easy, especially when you know what you're doing. You guys have done a fantastic job, right? So if somebody says, change things, you go like, what? You know? So there has to be certain, I would say, incentives or motivational factors and help provided by financial institution, maybe government, maybe, you know, other opportunities out there where you could get a financial benefit out of this exercise. And this is the reason why, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, and we can talk about it a little more in, you know, in the next few minutes, but Rabobank launched a program called Carbon Banking, the only financial institution in the world that's messing around with carbon credits right now, right? Messing around like we're not. Hopefully we know what we're doing. But so we launched that pilot program, and a handful of clients we discovered through that pilot program and the fact that we need to go through it, we discovered Mitchell and we partnered with them. So it's absolutely fantastic partnership that I'm looking forward to forge for the next foreseeable future as well. But in that pilot program, we're looking at ways to incentivize the clients that are participating to actually take charge, implement regenerative agriculture practices, get incentivized monetarily to do that, and then do something with that carbon credit somewhere else where people can, are not as fortunate to actually have the opportunity of taking charge or doing something about that. So that's one way to work together and actually provide the benefit for the farmer. The other one is you can create the model out there where you'd say, here's a criteria. If you participate as a client or as a client of Rabobank in certain things related to this criteria, then you would be, you know, receiving certain benefits out of that. So, and that whole criteria can be all about sustainability. So that's another program that we're working on.
More carbon markets, Zach.
More carbon markets. Yeah, it's like the Wild West. You don't know where you're going to go right now. It just seems like everybody's trying to figure out exactly, I mean, what do we take this idea, or how do we take this idea and figure out what direction to go with it? Right now, it seems like everyone's kind of scattering and trying to figure that out.
That's exciting, though. That's super exciting. Imagine partnership. Imagine us here. That's why we're here. We're here to actually figure that out. This is good. This is awesome. Come on. This is like a new thing. This is like .com, you know, over again. I mean, hopefully it's not going to be that painful and see all kinds of organizations crushing out there, you know, but falling from the sky. But this is exciting. And it's not about carbon at the end of the day. Use it as a pilot. It's about water credits. It's about animal welfare credits. It's about sustainability credits at the end of the day. Can you imagine that we start with carbon and we end up there? It's going to be awesome. This is how we're going to move the needle on sustainability with incentives and with partnerships and with a better future.
Wait a second. Did someone just say environmental credits, like markets outside of carbon markets?
Yes, carbon today. We're thinking about that. And, you know, to the extent, look, there's a market to the extent that somebody wants to buy it. And so, you know, there can be habitat credits. There could be certainly nitrogen and phosphorus are things that we're looking at in terms of the nutrient reduction strategy, but there could be a number of. That's why I sort of say it's the environmental credit, or I think you said sustainability credit. I define it as you would like. And on carbon, there you talk about the things that a government role or things that need to be better established. There's what I would call there's a healthy skepticism out there, right? There's a lot of questions. Healthy skepticism. Is that too kind? Zach's not sure he agrees, but I think there's a lot of questions, rightfully so. If you're a farmer and you're looking into, you're looking to sign on a dotted line, you'd better understand, as with anything, what are you getting into? Have your eyes wide open. Know what you're signing. And that's important. I'd say that about anything that you'd be getting into. So having a healthy skepticism is okay. And it certainly is disruptive, isn't it? And that can be very exciting. I'm excited about what it means for this. Again, moving us ahead in what we can do in terms of practice adoption and the layered benefits that can bring.
Carbon markets are a booming industry, and for good reason. But how does this really affect sustainable farming? And are markets like these truly scalable? That's next time on Dialed Up. Thanks for listening.